VoiceOver describes what's happening on your iPhone screen.
VoiceOver on, settings.
So you can navigate it just by listening.
Books, contacts, calendar, double tap to open. Breakfast with Anna from 10 to 11.
And get on with your day. Accessibility. There's more to iPhone.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. United Healthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hello and welcome to The Ruck. I'm Alex Lowe, and this week I'm joined by the Bath and England wing, Joe Thokonosinga. I'll discuss with Joe his journey from playing alongside his father for the Army Regiment team in Brunei to representing England and going to the World Cup, and what's been a challenging and sometimes traumatic few months for him and the family. Joe came roaring onto the international stage in the autumn of 2018 with tries in his first two tests. Eddie Jones described him as absolutely devastating and saw his Pacific mix of pace and power as being key weapons in England's World Cup quest. Things didn't pan out that way. We now know that Joe was managing a long-term knee injury. Bath ruled he wasn't fit to train when he returned from Japan and sent him to see a specialist. The operation was a success, but all the while, Joe's been dealing with a much bigger crisis. His mother has undergone two operations for a brain tumour, while his father's been stranded in Fiji, unable to return to Britain due to complex immigration rules. Joe can discuss for the first time the impact it's had on him and his family, how it put his own injury into perspective, and how he's used the lockdown to find the missing quality he believes will unlock his full potential. Joe, thanks for joining us on The Ruck from what looks to be a very sunny Bath.
Yeah, it's always been sunny, so...
How are you?
Yeah, I'm good, thank you. I'm quite enjoying lockdown. You know, I'm trying to find out the positive out of the lockdown and trying to discover new things about me and trying to find new hobbies.
Yeah, well, what positives have you found about lockdown and what have you found out about yourself?
I don't know, I've just got a lot of free time. Well, normally as a rugby player you get a lot of free time, especially after training, but with this going on, like you don't want to waste your time in being locked down, so I've tried to like listen to podcasts and which I don't normally do. And just trying to explore the world more. I've been looking into that Wim Hof, and I've been watching a lot on like Mike Tyson, and just trying to pick different ideas from players, like, and especially like LeBron. And then obviously with that Last Dance documentary that came out, I've just been literally obsessed with that. Trying to find, I'd say, as much as I did my knee, I didn't have that much motivation at the start. But now, like being locked down, it's put things in perspective. It's kind of made set a little another fire in me to. Come back.
Has it? But it's taken sort of seeking inspiration from other sources to ignite that fire again?
Yeah, definitely. Especially watching Last Dance. It's hard because I'd watch Michael Jordan and be like, oh, I want to be like that player. But the way he was off the court, I'm not like that. So I think it's trying to find the balance of picking different stuff and just seeing how other players were injured and, you know, they got back better. No, that kind of inspires me.
On Tyson, Joe, have you spoken to Ellis Genge? He's a huge Tyson fan. He's got his image on his boots.
You know, he loves Tyson. You kind of see the Tyson in him. when I've been watching Mike Tyson, I see why Genji loves this guy. You know, they could be quite similar characters.
What was it from him? I mean, there are those images on social media of him back in training, and the speed of the guy is remarkable, yeah. Particularly for his age. I mean, it's always been remarkable, but he doesn't seem to have lost it. But also all the other sort of sources that you've looked at, what were the things you learned that made you think, you know, I've got my fire back, I'm keen to play when fit?
Just them like mentality going into games, and the way Mike Tyson's, when he walks into the ring and he's just always looking into their eyes, you know, he pretty much knows when he's won. Before he's even got into the ring, just stuff like that. And yeah, I think just their mentality and stuff going into knowing that you're ready to dominate. And I feel like sometimes I've gone into games, and I'm obviously a chill character, so I go into games quite chill, but you know, I kind of want to make that step up because I feel like that will just make me a better player. And I've always been taught at a young age from my parents that when I'm on the pitch, it's not like not being arrogant, but telling you in your head that you're the best player on that pitch. Like, just keep telling yourself you're the best player on that pitch. No one's going to stop you. But then, like, off the pitch, you just, like, you go and respect them on pitch as well. But that's the main thing I've always carried on as my child. Like, you just telling yourself you're the best player on the pitch, going onto the pitch. And I felt that I've always worked, but obviously not, like, trying not to be arrogant. But just, I think it helps a lot if you keep telling yourself, like, you're backing yourself. And
yeah, I don't think anyone who's played at the level you're at can get there without that kind of sense of mental fortitude and self-belief, can they? I mean, I don't think people would think it's arrogant for you to step on the field and know that you have to back yourself the whole way.
Yeah.
I guess it's just interesting to talk to you about that isn't necessarily your character off the field and whether you're comfortable. Are you comfortable in your on-field persona? Are you learning to be comfortable in it? And I know you do a lot of work that you have done off the field with psychologists about convincing yourself you can be the game changer. And is that the kind of the work in progress that you're talking about?
Yeah, definitely. I think that's something I've always, I feel like that's something I'm missing. Cause ever since the World Cup and the whole season before that, I've still felt like there was something missing in my game plan and I couldn't think what it was. And, you know, Anthony put me in touch with a psychologist that he uses, Don McPherson. And the way I saw Ant come back from his injury, being so much better than he was before, and even day in, day out of training, you can tell it's got a huge, there's a huge difference. And I feel like that was the thing I was missing a lot, was like my mental skills. And I feel like that's the one thing I need to get, you know, because I feel like I still haven't shown everyone what I can do. I've still got a lot more in me. And I've always, when it came to like mental stuff, I've always like, oh yeah, that's interesting, but like kind of pass it on. But now, like, obviously with lockdown and stuff happening, it's made me think that that's the one thing that's been missing. And it's something I want to be a master at.
So have you been in touch with Don McPherson through the last couple of months?
Yeah. So we worked as soon as I got injured. And, you know, he's really, like, the stuff he does is just, you know, world class. And, yeah, and obviously I'd thank Ant for putting him in touch with me, because that was the blessing I needed.
So we should say at this point, the injury you referred to is a knee injury, and you picked up a correct me if I'm wrong with this chronology, but I think you had an issue from the last World Cup warm-up game in Newcastle. I remember seeing you out in Japan through the World Cup, always with a black brace around your knee. You played against the USA. You trained all the way through. We were told that you were available. I remember watching you training in the week of the semi-final and final, but you haven't played since. You came home and Bath were telling us that actually the situation was really quite complicated and you needed to go and see some world-leading specialists to just get a proper handle on the situation. Can you tell us what was wrong and what you've learned and really what the kind of the prognosis is going forward?
Yeah, so I had a split in my knee tendon. I think it's something that I've always had before, and I've always like just managed it, and then it just got worse and worse. And but the thing with me, like, I could carry on, so I didn't feel any different. But I think after the World Cup, we kind of decided that, yeah, I think it's time to like just get a check. You know, there's no rush for any games now, and so got it scanned and shown that there's a split in it. So we went to see our different specialists around London, and was just, they were trying to get their different takes on it, and we had a surgeon that. Jack Knoll, the same guy that did Jack Knoll, he had the same injury as well. And we looked through, he said, well, if you need the op, but it's better to try and rehab it. So we tried rehabbing it for a bit and it just wasn't getting any better, which was obviously, like, for me, like, mentally just tiring, because I spent pretty much the whole pre-season of the World Cup trying to get my knee in good shape, and then to come back and then try and do that again, it's just, for me, it was just mentally tiring and not seeing it get better. So we kind of decided, I think it's time to get the op on it. And I flew to Sweden. I remember, like, afterwards, like, I was in the hotel next door after the op, and I was like, oh, that's a big weight off my shoulders now. Like, mentally knowing that it's fixed. So from then on, I've just been rehabbing it.
And how long will it be till you're ready to play, do you think?
It's hard to tell, because with the lockdown and stuff, it put delays and stuff. So it's, we're not really sure on when I'm back and stuff. But the good thing I'm trying to pick from it is that you know, I'm finally squatting now, and I haven't been able to squat in 2 years with weight, with like a lot of weight in my back. So I know I'm going in the right direction.
I can sense that sense of relief, I suppose, in that hotel room when, you know, I was reading a piece from a colleague of mine who came to talk to you down in Bath after the Japan and Australia games 2018, after you'd made your debut and scored those two tries. And you said then you hadn't squatted, you didn't squat because of your knees.
Yeah.
To be able to do something now, you know, you played Test rugby, you went to a World Cup, to now be able to do things you couldn't do before after that operation, it must be a real relief, because perhaps the future looks a bit brighter than perhaps it might have done.
Yeah, definitely. I think when I first did the squat, I was like, oh my God, I can't. I've never done that before. The last time I did it was like London Irish Academy. So just doing that and knowing that everything's slowly falling into places, I'm like, it kind of puts things in perspective. And and obviously this lockdown, obviously it's really bad. I was saying this before, it's really bad, obviously, what's happening. But I think for me, it's kind of been a blessing in disguise. Obviously, I wouldn't want like all the stuff to happen, but it's given me time to not rush back for anything and not rush back for matches and just kind of love my knee a bit more.
You've got to use that time properly.
Yeah.
And it sounds like maybe at the start you were sort of struggling a bit with it, but you found the positive from it, like we were discussing earlier. Were you able to enjoy the World Cup then? If you were managing that knee the whole way and we kept being told you were in contention to play, as I say, you played against the USA, but I don't know, watching you in training, you didn't look all that comfortable at times. You had that brace. Were you able to enjoy the experience of it if you were constantly managing a knee and desperately trying to play?
Yeah, I definitely. I looking back, I loved the World Cup and I missed it. And, you know, when you're there, you're like, you're missing home and stuff. And it's weird. As soon as you come back, you're like, damn, I miss more about being with, like, the boys. I think everyone said that a lot, especially the last 2 days. I remember leaving Heathrow after the World Cup and I felt a bit lost because I was like, I don't know what to do now. I spent all this time trying to prep for the World Cup and being in that whole bubble of the World Cup, you're like, oh, you don't know what to do. But no, I loved it. Like, I was with my knee, I just had to change how I prepped, and it kind of made me more professional how I looked after it. And, you know, I have to arrive training early with other boys that had stuff like that, and we had just took long for us to warm up, and I quite enjoyed it because it made me more professional and it kind of like matured me more. And because normally before, so there'll be sometimes not with England, but like four with Irish, and you know, sometimes Bath, sometimes you barely warm up and you just go and you just back yourself. But like looking back at it, now I take more of a professional step to it, and now I just take my time warming up, and then when I'm ready, I'm ready.
The journey that you've had, and I think you sort of touched on earlier, it's there are lots of it came easily. I think as you've just sort of touched on there, you're a big guy, took up rugby fairly late. You went a long way fairly easily. I don't think that's unfair in saying it. And what you're now facing, it sounds like, are the physical and mental challenges of kind of being still a very young professional playing in the, you know, the highest level of the game. And those are the things that you're having to learn fairly late on, perhaps.
Yeah, I think it's all catching up. I'd say that everything happened so easily, but I don't want to say easy, but everything came so quick for me. I didn't have time to like think, oh, I've just been doing this, as in being doing that has got me to this. Now looking back of it, because everything happened so quick, I didn't have time to try and discover new things, and now it's all catching up to me. And I'm still very young, so I still got a lot of time to like learn and pick up new things.
So let's have a look. Let's go back on that journey. You've talked before about growing up on the army base in Germany and playing football to start with. Was that your first? Did you think you were going to be a footballer at that point? Was that your first sort of introduction to sport? I'm surprised your dad, Fijian soldier, lover of rugby himself, didn't make you grow up with a rugby ball in your hands at all times.
No, I think as soon as we said, I think they just wanted us out of the house, so whatever sport we're doing, they just, me and my brother, little brats. No, because we lived in the army base in Germany, so everything was, it was football, and so we'd have it training every, I remember it was Monday, Thursday, and I remember after schools, you'd always bring your kit with you to school and just chuck it in your bag and you just cycle there, and like we played, and the kids I went to school with and some of my mates that I've in Germany, they're still one of my good mates here, and just remember, all I can remember is just us cycling there and just playing football every weekend against other German teams. Even played against Borussia Mönchengladbach girls.
How did that go for you?
I think it was a 6-1 to us.
Did you score that game, Joe?
Yeah, I did, but I don't want to say how I scored. A lot of people will be messaging me now saying that's a lie.
Was it a long distance?
Yeah.
Was it from the halfway line?
It was supposed to be a clearing. And I'd say just above the halfway, but I remember I'd always be aggressive. I played centre-back and I'd always be aggressive and, you know, I'd always use my size as one of my weapons. And I think everyone kind of knew when I became a role player, they always said, oh, when I saw you play football, we knew you'd somehow be a rugby player. But I think the main reason why we didn't play rugby was because you'd have mini rhinos on a Sunday, and the Sunday's when all the Fijians go to church. And it's always been a thing, you can't play on Sundays. It's the Lord's Day of Rest. So I think that's the main reason why we kind of missed out on the rugby. You'd end up playing for your school, which you do into tournaments with, which is once every term. But I think the main reason why we didn't play rugby week in, week out, was because it was on a Sunday.
How have you reconciled that with yourself now, playing matches on Sunday?
It's my job now, so I kind of have to.
Your family moved to Brunei, and I think that's where you took up rugby, would I be right?
Yeah, which like surprised me a lot, because they don't even know Brunei is a country. But that's because there's such a big Australian, New Zealand influence on it, because of like the oil and Aussies and Kiwis coming over to work there because of the oil. There's always, they play touch every Thursday or every Tuesday. And we never really knew about that until one of the other Fijian families were there and, oh, come, we'll play touch. So we'd go as a family, like me, my mum, my dad, my sister, my brother, we'll go play touch by the beach. And you'd have like a nice rugby pitch just by the beach, and you'd have snake skin just all ratted around the pitches because there's loads of snakes in Brunei. But we'd always play touch there, and then there's a tournament they did in Brunei with just that. I think there's like four teams, and they'll just do round robin, and they asked if we wanted to play, and my dad joined, and then I remember I got asked to play, and I played with him, and that would pretty much be our weekends. Our 2 years in Brunei, that would be our weekends, just playing rugby for Panda Pythons. So you'd just play for them, and that was literally my Saturday night for 2 years in Brunei.
I spoke to an old coach of yours, Hansi Hickey, who you were playing a couple of years above yourself. Just looking here, he said every time he touched the ball, he was steamrolling people. He showed no fear. I remember we had some team drills of relay races, and he ended up carrying me. And I must have been about 120 kg.
Yeah, we did. I remember that day because it was a sevens tournament, and the next day we were flying to Kuala Lumpur, Malaysia. It was my first proper rugby tournament, and
you were 15 at this point, roughly.
Yeah, 15, yeah. 16, and we did drills where you'd carry the thing, and no one wanted to take me, so I had to take Hansi. So I carried Hansi on my back, and he did the same, and there's a picture of it somewhere, I think. Yeah, and that was my first proper sevens tournament, and I think we lost, I'm not sure, but we didn't make it to the finals. But yeah, I used to love those tournaments, just going away to like Kuala Lumpur. And looking back at it, you don't realise how big rugby is in Malaysia. Everyone's wearing an All Blacks jersey. Even I was wearing an All Blacks jersey. Yeah, and you just, looking back at it, I wish I did more.
More of what? More of playing at that age?
More of like exposing myself. But then again, I still played a lot of rugby, and I played a lot of club rugby with my dad, with the regiment and with the club. And I played for, I think, Brunei on the 16s as well. I was the only foreign kid there, so it was just...
Your dad, so I spoke to him for a long time last year, actually, and I'm just looking back on some of the things he was telling me then about the day that you first played together. Tell us what you remember about that. Your dad was a number eight, a monster number eight, Hansi described him as. But that day, he insisted on playing alongside you in midfield.
Yeah, I think because he was just a bit overprotective, so he didn't want someone to come running at me. Then, but I remember he'd do all the hard work, and I remember someone running straight at me. My dad like popped out the line and just smacked him. The ball came out and I scored. Like I got in and scored. And I always remember like my mum and my sister on the side. Like my mum always said, "Whatever you do, Joe gets hurt. You're not playing rugby again." To my dad.
he was in full on protection mode.
Yeah, yeah.
He said that was so special to be able to play with Joe. I couldn't believe he was playing with me. Only a year earlier, he was playing football. Then your dad signed you up for the regimental team, in which he had to sign a disclaimer form to let you play, even though you weren't old enough to play. I think you were then 16, 17.
Yeah.
Now you're playing against soldiers and you're still dominating.
He was in that regiment, but they were doing other tournaments against other teams in Brunei as well. So it wasn't just the army, it was like other teams in Brunei. And I got asked from another team that our club is a part of, but I was going to play for them. My dad didn't want to go against me because obviously you don't tackle your son, do you? He mentioned to the regiment guy, he's like, I want my son to play. And they were like, no. And he's like, okay, then I'm not going to play then. I'm going to go play with the other team. And they were like, no, you can come. You can come. Bring your son as well. And yeah, I remember the first game, I didn't go on at all. And I remember like watching it. My dad kept looking back at the bench, being like, why is he not putting me on? Like, why are you not putting me on? I think he kept kind of feeling sorry for me. And after that, he came, he's like, why are you not putting some benches on? And then the next game, he kind of pretended he was injured, so put me back on. Yeah, we ended up winning it, and I think I scored the last try to win it. That was our partnership from then on.
That's pretty special, isn't it? To be able to do that with your dad.
Yeah, and it wasn't just my dad. It was like my uncles there as well that are living in Brunei and, you know, playing against them. And I remember one of my uncles that we grew up with, he came over to Brunei because my parents were like, involved in a car crash, so my dad couldn't play. I remember playing against him, and I was like, this guy used to change my nappies and I'm playing with him. But yeah, that was good fun. And I remember the day where my dad got my mum, my dad and my sister got in a big car accident, and it landed on the back of a car, and it dented his head and it made like a big scar for his head. And I think had an operation to seal it up. And then I think 2 weeks later, you're playing rugby again. So
I guess, is that the soldier and the rugby player in him? I'm not going to be cheap about this. I'm getting back on the rugby field.
Yeah, pretty much on the FOMO as well. Like, not.
So when did that kind of wonderful sort of adventure in Brunei and playing with your dad come to an end? Was it when you then moved as a family to England?
Yeah, so we moved back to the UK, to Watford, and that kind of just finished up. And I remember we were saying, like, let's try and get an academy. So my dad knew Akapusingera, quite close to him, because I remember in Germany we spent a lot of time in Plymouth, because that was where my dad's brother was at, because he was in the Navy. So, and that was where Ngara, his wife was.
Ngara, the former Fiji captain.
His wife was living as well. My dad would always drink kava with him, and like, they became quite close. So in Brunei, we sent him like a message there, and here's like a little short clip of Joe playing. Is any chance he can get into Harpury? So that went on. It went on for a while, and then I think I was 16. Yeah, it must have been 16, and I couldn't get into Harpury. So something like I was too young or something, like that. I remember going to his house and he was meeting, and his agent or someone he knew, Billy Clark, who's my agent now, knew Ngara. I was quite close to Ngara. I was like, oh look, if he's in, told Billy's like, look, he's in London. Why you come? It makes sense for him to join a London club. So he's like, he probably said, he's a Fijian kid. I think Billy can explain more on it. Is that his Virginia did come for a trial? So I remember I had a trial for London Irish, and I was just absolutely breaking it, because I remember going in for a trial, and the team were training up for like their semi-final, the final at Allianz Park, the academy. And I went in and did like a session with them. And I think Billy said it as soon as he saw my thighs, he's like, yeah, he's in.
As you're listening to me, Daisy, Apple's iPhone disassembly robot, is dismantling an iPhone into lots of recyclable parts. That's how Apple recovers more materials than conventional recycling methods. Thanks, Daisy. There's more to iPhone.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Mm-hmm.
This is The Ruck, and I'm talking with Joe Thokonosinga, who received his first England call-up for the 2017 Tour of Argentina after Eddie Jones had spotted his international potential as a 19-year-old playing in the Championship.
You've spoken a lot about that England tour. You were taken as a rookie, really for development, so Eddie could start working with you. He could see your potential. If kind of moving to London Irish Academy was eye-opening for you, with the pace of the game and all that kind of that experience. I mean, you talk about life changing. That was a sort of sink or swim, wasn't it? That trip.
Yeah. I had one of the biggest shocks of my life because I didn't realise how detailed it was and how hard you have to train and just everything's detailed, and like you always have to be 100% into everything. And when you're playing for England, so you're gonna have to. That's not surprising. So I remember after the tour being like, I think I was too immature for it, but Eddie kind of knew what he was doing. Just giving me that experience. After that tour, I knew what I had to do. I kind of had to grow up a little bit, and you know, I had to work for my sport. And even though if I'm starting, I've got to keep working and always try and get better.
They wouldn't have expected you to be the finished article at 18. And do you think that taking you was the lesson that he and the people around you, whether it was, you know, John Fletcher and those guys, knew that if you had your eyes open to it, it would be the best lesson for you? I don't think you would pick to play necessarily, but it's part of your development.
Yeah, I definitely think I was taken to, you know, experience and like, yeah, so I think that kind of helped me a lot, because then after that I knew what I had to do and what I couldn't, what I had to, you know, throw in the bin.
It was about a year later, autumn of 2018 was the test debut came, which wasn't, I understand, the first time you'd been at Twickenham for a big event.
I went for the World Cup 2015, and yeah, because my sister worked for the embassy and they needed some dancers, so my rig was all right then, so I was like, you know what, I just might as well show it off. But yeah, we did like a dance before the opening game against Fiji, and then from then on we went to the park at near Richmond and kind of watched on the big screen in my, like, still in my grass skirt and traditional clothing. And yeah, so that from then on, but I'd never think that, you know, a couple more years I'd be playing there. So yeah, it's just weird how things happen.
Yeah, so 2015, you're outside the main gates at Twickenham performing a traditional Fijian dance to rugby fans streaming in for the opening game of the World Cup. 2 years on from that, you're on an England tour. 3 years on from that, you're making your debut against Japan at Twickenham. I mean, that is some speedy ascent.
Yeah, I was actually watching that game back yesterday, the whole Japan game, and more because I've wanted to start watching more rugby again. But now I wanted to get that feeling back. I watched the whole game, and I just that whole feeling of that whole week. And I'd been to Twickenham before that. South Africa game as a travelling reserve, and I remember saying that I remember Eddie coming up to me and saying, next week's going to be your turn, mate, just before the South Africa game. And I remember thinking, oh god, I was like, oh no. Well, not like, oh no, but like, oh my god, this is actually happening. But then, because the week went on, you kind of forget about it because you don't think it's real. But then the Monday going in, you're doing these bibs and you're like, oh, I'm actually starting, I'm going to start this game. Yeah, just that whole week of prepping, going, moving hotels, then driving to Twickenham. I think if there's a game that I wanted to relive again, I think this could be that Japan game, because just of that feeling that I had. And
So when you reached the end of it yesterday, what emotions did it bring back?
Just like excitement, a lot of excitement, because I haven't felt that for a while. I haven't played in ages. I haven't played since November. So just excitement of like preparing for a game, and yeah, just I don't know, it just made me really excited.
And when you watched it, did you watch yourself? Were you following yourself through it, or were you just watching it for the game and for the experience of sort of rekindling those memories?
A bit of both. I watched the whole game, but like when it came to me, I'd always like keep replaying it and just seeing, could I've done this better, or just seeing what, trying to think what was going through my head at that time. Yeah, I think just trying to relive the whole moment.
Because it was a tough first half for England that day. I think you were losing at the interval.
Yeah, it was close. Or if either we were losing or it was close. But I remember Kieran at the house, like that game of rugby was very quick. As in that the ball speed, and I was blowing. And then that kind of shocked me, because like that's how international teams play now. And then second half, I think we kind of got a kick up our ass and came back.
And then you kept your place for the following week. And earlier in this conversation, you talked about that moment, put maybe your favourite moment on a field when you're running, you have a bit of a run up with a ball in hand and you feel like you can dominate. Yeah. From memory, that's exactly what happened for the try you scored. You kind of run into Haylett Petty, yeah. Was it? You know, he goes flying off your thigh, yeah. and you're away. And if Japan was what you're looking back as an experience, is that as a moment, would that be your favourite moment so far?
Yeah, definitely. Or it could be like that try, but there's a moment where they're in our 22, they whip a ball, someone whips a ball over to side Johnny May's wing. It's the one where he kicked it, it bounced on the line, he kicked it again and he scored it, but it wasn't a try. You can see on the footage, like, I'm right next to him, and I remember like just looking up, I could hear like everyone just standing up from their crowd, step from their seats and just be like just shouting and stuff. And when I ran from there, like something just switched into me, like just went, I was in a different type of mode and I just wouldn't stop running. And then seeing Johnny score that, I was just so happy. And yeah, so I think that could be one of the moments. But
and those are the kind of moments that you're spending time now just working to recapture, just to fuel the fire, I guess, for whenever, yeah. You can get back out there again.
Yeah, there's times where like I look back on my tries and or something I've done well, and or like I think even watching me run like quick, even if it's a chase or even though the ball in hand, it kind of excites me, and like I want to, you know, as Don always says, like you can change the brain chemicals in your head to increase the speed of your rehab, like just making myself excited again. And yeah,
it's been a challenging period for you, not just physically with your knee, but you've had a lot on your plate personally and as a family. For anyone who doesn't know, Joe's father Ilya Tia, is that how the best way to pronounce,
yeah.
it, Ilya Tia, couldn't come to the World Cup to watch you because there are issues over his immigration status, despite the fact he served 3 tours with the British Army. But he did go back to Fiji for your sister's wedding, and he's still there and was unable to come home when your mum went through 2 operations for brain tumours. Just how tough has that been for you personally and for the family? I can't imagine how frustrated and disappointed your father is, being out there, A, not being able to come back, having served for the country on 3 tours, I think 1 in Iraq, 2 in Afghanistan, but also, you know, not being able to be there for your mum. Just how hard has it been for you and for the family, just dealing with all those things on top of injury and that kind of stuff?
Especially at the start, I think it was really hard. You know, I was trying to deal with my knee, and then given that news that my mum had to have operations and she was told she had a brain tumour, It was hard. It's hard for us as a family, but it kind of, you know, I remember we all sat down and like we prayed and stuff, and we kind of thought. So it was before. So my mum got the news about her brain tumor before we went to Fiji, and we kind of thought, you know, when times are tough, we'll always, because we're religious. When times are tough, we'll pray, and you know, always, yeah, we'll always be praying and always be giving thanks to the Lord. And then when times were going well, we kind of forgot about what got us there. We kind of thought that was a kick up of our ass of, you know, time, you know, we need to slow down in our lives. We're going too quick, we're not. So that's something we kind of thought about. And then obviously with my dad thing happening after, it kind of made us stronger together, because we had to care for my mum more. You know, sometimes at training I'd leave. I wouldn't come in for two days a week. I'd come in Monday, Tuesday, then miss Wednesday, Thursday, Friday just to be at home. You know, mum had like panic attacks because the medication she was taking. So I'd always be there with my brother and sister. So it was quite hard, you know, going on, doing that week in, week out, trying to deal with my knee, and then, you know, having to miss 3 days and then go back home. And, you know, that was pretty much my life. That was like my life for a couple of, probably 2 months, and we find it quite hard as a family, but I think it's definitely made us stronger. And it's like looking back, like at that time, I didn't give a shit about my knee, because it put things in perspective, and like, you know what, there's worse things happening to it, like other people. And but then it kind of gave me a kick up the arse, saying, you know what, I'm on rehab now, get better, and you know, play for my mum, play for my parents. So obviously it's really hard, and something in the future I want to start looking into about Commonwealth stuff. And I kind of want to make it easier for not only Fijian soldiers but Commonwealth soldiers, you know, for them easier to transition into civilian life, and make it easier for for them to become a British citizen without paying, you know, a certain amount of money. So I kind of thought it was an eye opener for me. And we weren't, when we released it on the Gut, we weren't really too sure because we're quite a private family, don't like our things being out there. So, but then we kind of decided, you know, if it's not only going to help us, it's going to help other people. So we definitely think it's a bit of a blessing, and it's something that we can look back on and say that we can definitely use it as a positive thing.
I mean, it generated, and yours wasn't the only story. There have been stories recently of Fijian soldiers not having the same rights. I think Dan Leo, who runs the Players Union, I guess, representing players of Pacific origin, helped raise a lot of money for a Fijian soldier who had a huge medical bill to pay. That whole effort did garner a lot of public support. Can I just ask, how is your mum now?
Yeah, she's well. We found out she had a first operation, and she was obviously, it was hard for her because we couldn't go into hospital because of COVID and stuff. So she spent three days at hospital and had her operation all good, but then there was a leak and they wanted another look at it. So she had another operation, had a scan afterwards. You know, she got the good news that it wasn't a cancer. Just a brain tumor, so she'll need a final op in July. But you know, she's much better now, and things are getting better.
Is your dad bearing up okay?
Yeah, he's doing well. He's in Fiji, so
yeah. I guess, I mean, maybe even bringing the sort of the conversation full circle to just understanding yourself a bit and what you talked about there—that just slowing down and realizing everything's going too fast—it feels like that's a kind of almost a culture clash between the way that life is in England, a million miles an hour, and the Fijian way of life, which is a lot slower.
Yeah.
I remember Nicky Little once saying at the 2007 World Cup, he said in Fiji, we're either sitting under the coconut tree or rowing the boat. But most of the time, I like to sit under the coconut tree. You know, that was just a lovely image. You know, how do you view your sort of Anglo-Fijian identity? You know, you're fiercely passionate about your Fijian background, as you discussed, meeting the Queen and representing the embassy and such like. Is that one of the areas where you're trying to marry two different ways of life?
Yeah, like I always get called from my grandma's saying, you know, just to always they're always trying to keep me humble and just remind me of where I'm from. And I think definitely going back in Fiji in December after I haven't been there for a long time, and I haven't been there since all the England stuff and, you know, all my rugby career. And I went back and looked back and went, yeah, this is where I'm from. Like going back to our house and like driving past our village, you meet all your family members. You're like, yeah, this is where I'm from. But yeah, I don't know. It's quite, I don't know how to explain it, but I think I keep it well balanced.
You know, it's a fascinating part of you as a person and as a player, because we see the Fijian element in a lot of what you do. You know, you like to keep the ball alive, play one-handed, you know, which is a natural, you know, a natural trait of a Fijian rugby player. But you're living up here and you're doing it with England, and you've been here for so long. And there are just two interesting elements of you as a person all come together and making Joe the player.
That's helped me a lot with my skills going into games. That, you know, just you've got that Fijian flair on you, so don't hide it away in your locker.
When you're free from home and having to cut your own hair, as you were telling me about earlier,
you'll be
more fired up than ever to go and play that down at the Rec or at Twickenham if and when these games get back on.
I keep telling my girlfriend I'm ready to go, but you know, I need to stop rowing the boat and sit under the coconut tree a bit more.
VoiceOver describes what's happening on your iPhone screen.
VoiceOver on. Settings.
So you can navigate it just by listening.
Books. Contacts. Calendar. Double tap to open. Breakfast with Anna from 10 to 11.
And get on with your day. Accessibility. There's more to iPhone.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.